Welcome to the Big Pod Machine, Cincinnati's greatest baseball podcast ever. With Pat Brennan, I'm Gordon Wittenmeyer, and we've got Phil Didion behind the scenes, the best producer in all of baseball for podcasts. And I'm going to start right off, Pat, with some news. As we speak here, we're nearing the end of a homestand against the Pirates and the Mariners, which has gone pretty damn well for the team. But more than just the wins, they got back some key guys on Tuesday as the Mariners series opened. Got former closer, emphasis on former for now, Alexis Diaz. Austin Hayes, who made his debut Tuesday, a much anticipated debut. And Matt McClain, who we wondered about that hamstring, how long it would keep him out. Turned out it kept him out for the minimum. And he's back now. So obviously some key guys there. One guy still missing. What's the latest you've heard on Tyler Stevenson?
Yeah, Tyler Stevenson. In the flurry of news items that we discussed with Terry Francona yesterday at the ballpark in his office, Tyler Stevenson did come up. He's going to start. He's been doing catching drills, catching off a pitching machine right in front of the Reds dugout for the last couple Good days. Time. And he will start throwing the bases, I think is how Terry Francona described it, put it to us in his office. So do you have any idea what that phrase would mean? Probably throwing down to second.
Throwing down to second.
Yeah.
So or throwing to second, throwing to third, back pick into first.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, and I think the biggest item from all of that is that it's possible that Tyler Stevenson could begin a rehab assignment next week. Now, that's, you know, that I think Terry said his rehab clock could start next week. So
that's interesting because, I mean, these obliques can sometimes linger. And he'll need quite a few at bats because when was the last time he had a competitive at bat in a game?
It was during my second tour in Goodyear, which, as you know, was still 2 weeks away from the end of spring training. So he's got a lot of ground to make up.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's a good sign that he could be starting a rehab assignment. I mean,
I think it's good to see him around the clubhouse, too, for the guys. It feels like a more complete team, and it feels like a piece of the core is there, even though he's not able to contribute.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, we got it. By the way, Jose Trevino, I mean, the good news in all of this with Stevenson being out, you know, one of the better offensive catchers in the game, is that Trevino's actually producing. He's getting his hits down there in the lower part of the order, and we know what kind of glove he brings. Platinum glove winner behind the plate a few years ago. So, all signs kind of pointing up at that position right now.
Yeah, and I think pitchers really love throwing to Austin Wins, too. So, you know, he's done a job behind home plate as well. So, I mean, you know, you and I discussed weeks ago that, you know, with healthy Stevenson and Jose Trevino, the Reds probably have the best catching tandem in the game. Maybe you could extend that down to three deep with Wins because he catches a good ball game and he's got a little offense to add too. He's been chipping in during this Reds hot streak.
Okay, so your prediction then. When the time comes to activate Stevenson, all else is going the same with the two guys they've got back there now. Do you keep three catchers for a while?
Oh, wow.
Because remember, with
at the
Stevenson,
expense of who, you know?
I guess it would be, I mean, Blake Dunn by just the roster numbers.
Yeah, and, I would do that.
You know, through no fault of his. That's not an indictment of him.
But I would do that. Yeah, I would.
Yeah, because you can, you can get two of them in the lineup almost every day if you wanted to. You
know, yes, that's
Stevenson's
right.
Bat plays anywhere. You know, DHing.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Blake Dunn is batting 160 this year. And let's see. Austin Wynn's in, you know, obviously fewer plate appearances, is batting 308. So it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, he's had a little bit of pop too. That's interesting. But nothing's quite as interesting as what you're going to do with Alexis freaking Diaz. This guy in 2023 was the Reds' lone all-star, but deservedly so. I mean, as their closer, he was one of the dominant closers in the game the first half of that season. He carried that into the second half a little bit, but tailed off dramatically at the end of that season.
Yeah.
Struggled all last season. Couldn't find the strike zone in spring training. Had trouble finding the strike zone in his season debut this year for the big club after a rehab assignment. Is this guy going to see another save situation in his Reds career?
I think the obvious answer is yes, Gordon. I think.
Oh, you're out of your mind.
Come on, man. Look, there's.
What do you mean the obvious? Why would you give him the ball in the ninth? Give me some support for that position.
Well, I think that he had a short leash in his debut, and he reached the end of it. But I think that he walked.
Pitch count wise, you mean?
Yes. He walked his first batter. But I think Terry
Francona.
Half his
pitches were balls, dude.
But Terry Francona said that he actually wasn't so displeased with Alexis last night because he thought he threw six strikes in the first at bat, which ended up being a walk. So maybe a slight critique of the umpire's eyes on that first at bat. And, you know, that can change the momentum of the whole outing for Alexis if he gets the first out rather than it being
a
walk.
What a nice young man that manager is. What a nice, generous opinion that is.
Maybe. Look, I just think on pedigree alone, I think you have to give him a shot. And if everyone is sold on moving off of Alexis as the closer for this team, then just give it one more look in that situation and let that be the confirmation. Don't leave yourselves wondering. Give him the ball in the spot. Look, Emilio Pagan is getting a lot of work right now. So is Tony Santian. I think at some point you might have to go to him. Right now he's in a low leverage role, but I would think everyone would feel more comfortable going to him in the save situation one final time just to see, and let that be the bookend of the conversation.
No chance. No chance. I just, you know, if I'm running this team, unless it's every other guy's down and he's the fresh arm and we need to hold a lead, I'll put him out there. But and to your point, he's got experience doing that. I assume he's not going to melt down on that, but I've seen too many meltdowns over the last year plus to have faith in him. And until he rebuilds that faith, I don't let him anywhere near the ninth inning if I'm running that team. Look, Pagan doesn't have the stuff that Diaz has when Diaz is going well, but he'll make you earn your hit or your run or your base. And so I like a guy like that. I like a veteran guy like that. Santian has the stuff. You know, he tends to walk a few guys here and there too. So there's that concern. The guy I like to pay, if you're going to look at a guy going forward to build into that role, keep your eye on Graham Ashcraft. I like the guy's mentality. I like the guy's stuff. He's got perfect closer stuff, hard thrower with the slider. And I think he could be your answer by the end of the season with his bulldog mentality on top of that.
And I want to give you credit. You've been out in front on that for a while now. And now that Graham has really taken on, he has taken on a high leverage back end role in this bullpen.
He cleaned up your boy's mess.
I know
in
he
that
did.
First game against
and
Seattle.
that was a short outing for Graham, one and a third innings. Yeah, we grew accustomed over the last week prior to him going two innings. They really feel, I think after last week felt like a turning point for a few players individually. Obviously the team is going well right now. They've won 6 of 7, 4 in a row. But you know, even if you're not, if you don't want to invest in the team yet, buy stock in the team, I think you can buy stock in certain individuals who certainly look like they're coming around. Graham Ashcraft is one of those. And players, Tito, all started to talk about Graham in the vein of, you know, I think Emilio Pagan used the word weapon. He's a weapon for them. And this is just a few weeks into his stint in the bullpen, and he's already worked himself into a formidable seventh, eighth inning option for the Reds. So I am with you on that piece of it. I do want to give you credit once again. You've been on that since the jump.
Well, I like you bringing up Pagan again, because I think there's an additional value, not only of what he's doing in those ninth innings. He's 4 for 4 in saves. I think he lowered his ERA to just a tick over one.
Yeah.
It wasn't a save situation, but he finished off the ninth inning in that Seattle opener.
Yes.
But watching him do it, the younger guys, and they have a lot of veterans out there too, make no mistake, but even Diaz, watching how Pagan takes care of his business and does the job, it's got to help a guy like him.
Yeah.
So in any of the young guys that might be watching him. So there's a value there. Not only that, but we also know how he is in the clubhouse. He's a good influence that way too. And he'll talk to guys without being one of those in your face, overbearing types too. So he's a terrific influence.
Yeah.
And the fact that he can do it as a, as setting an example by going out and doing a job, it's huge value. I mean, I think you brought up on the last podcast this truism in baseball that you can't win a pennant in April, but you can lose one. Part of the value of early season is things like this, right? Like setting tones and getting yourself into the season, getting footing into the season. And we're seeing that. I mean, this ball club's won, 6 out of 7 games,
yeah,
as we record right now, going into that second game of the Seattle series. And they've not only righted their ship, but they got a winning record for the first time this year. So that's not nothing. It's not going to be easy the rest of the way. They just, but the pitching is going to be what they have to lean on, and they're getting it. And part of the way you're going to keep getting it is keep that other guy out of the ninth inning.
Look, all I'm saying is if they get into an extra inning situation and Diaz is the guy who gets the job done, I think there's a way he could play his way back into consideration.
Hey, look, I'm open to that. I'm open to second chances, although this is probably a third or fourth chance. But I don't see it. And there's too much at stake this season to rush it. But to your point, I mean, if Graham Ashcraft has a chance to grow over time into that role as the season plays on, maybe Diaz has a chance to write his own ship over time as the season goes on and earn, more responsibility. But I was not impressed with his season debut, especially after getting a little extra time. I think he got an extra week down there in the minors compared to what they expected him to. And he just doesn't look quite ready. Although relievers are volatile, man, it could change next time around.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, you want to talk about pitching. I mean, the starting rotation has done a job. Fangraphs says that even after Lodolo's short start on Tuesday, that they're the best rotation in baseball according to Fangraphs WAR, and they got the second best ERA. And the key to it, in my mind, the key to it is they walk fewer guys than anybody else in the game. And so that's a big part of it. But they're at full strength now with Andrew Abbott back, and he looked really – you saw that. What were your impressions of Abbott coming back, and what do you think that means going forward?
Well, I think he was great. I think he no-hit the Pirates through three innings. So just right out of the gate, big momentum. It was important, he said afterward, to put up some scoreless innings early and just gain that momentum. He ended up going five innings, probably could have gone six. Terry Francona said afterward they had him on about 90. They wanted him to throw no more than 90 pitches. He finished his fifth inning on 81 and was going into kind of the teeth of the Pirates' order, such as it is, and they didn't want to see him run up a big number pitch count wise, but he just looked like he was totally in command. He gave up one solo shot, I think, in the fourth inning, and he just looked like he was in complete command. And frankly, didn't miss a beat when you compare that outing against what the other Red starters are doing right now, which really impressive for the debut. I could see. You just don't know what you're going to get from Andrew Abbott in that situation, coming up from AAA, and where he had some mixed results in his last couple outings. One of those was a really bad weather game in Omaha, apparently, and the Reds were happy with how he performed in those circumstances. But the line, his pitching line that night, had some crooked numbers. So you just don't know what you're going to get against a big league roster, any big league roster, including the Pirates. And he went out and really gave a good account of himself over five innings, and he got the win. So and this is supposed to be their fifth starter. You know, if that's the kind of production you're going to get out of your fifth starter, and with the way the bullpen lines up right now, you don't mind the idea of trying to get four innings out of your bullpen. So that game just went, more or less exactly to plan, I think.
Yeah, and the sixth starter, the guy that filled in for two starts, Carson Spires, one of those two starts was pretty damn good.
Yeah, against the Rangers.
He battled.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so, knowing that you got a guy, that's a guy like that who goes out and pitches a good game, one start and struggles a little bit and tries to compete in the other start. That's what a fifth starter usually looks like.
Yeah.
And knowing you got him in the wings, never mind whenever Rhett Lauder comes back, never mind when Wade Miley's ready to pitch again, having a nice lefty veteran out there that you can plug in at some point, maybe in May. It's not fair to expect that they're going to sustain best rotation in baseball all year, but how about best rotation in the division? Do we think that maybe they're, maybe they're showing that if nothing else? I mean, the Brewers had injuries left and right early on, and had to go out and get Jose Quintana, who, by the way, looked really good in his Brewers debut.
Yeah.
But they're feast and famine when they hold teams to two runs or less, they win. And I think that, I don't know if they've won a game otherwise, maybe one. And then look up the standings, and it's actually a lot closer than it was a week ago, but look up at the Cubs. They already weren't deep in that rotation. They just lost Justin Steele, the closest thing they have to an ace for the year.
Big development there, really, and big development. So, I think that came down on Sunday. That was pretty jarring to see that.
Yes.
But if you're the Reds, you don't wish that on a competitor, but you won't mind. You won't mind. You won't mind it. I'll say that much for sure.
No, I know. Nobody wishes that on the
internet. No.
I know Justin Steele a little bit. He's a good guy.
Even before I jumped on this beat with you, Gordon, I knew that Andrew Abbott was, from afar, I knew that he was a solid starting pitcher. And as spring training developed and he encountered some of the obstacles that he had and the conversation became about Andrew in the fifth spot, I thought, I mean, even at that point, I thought, wow, that's a heck of a thing to have Andrew Abbott as your fifth starter. And yeah, like I said, if you can get, you know, just good.
You haven't even mentioned Hunter Green.
Yeah. Who didn't even have the lowest ERA on the team, the lowest among the starters going into last night. I'm sure he does now after Nick Lodolo had a shorter outing, but not totally ineffective for what it was. But yeah, we haven't mentioned Hunter Green. These guys look great right now. They really do. It's exciting to watch and be around.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, we're talking about this Reds team that's won 6 out of 7 games, and we're talking about a Cubs team that might be coming down to earth a little bit, certainly with their starting rotation and the bad news they got with Justin Steele, but they also have the teeth of their schedule for the rest of this month. They got a steady diet of the Dodgers and the Padres, the Diamondbacks. They've got the Phillies in there. They've got a ton of some of the top teams that they're going to have to face, I think, all the way through April 27th or 28th. Meanwhile, the Reds, you know, as we talk now, they've got they've won the first game of the Seattle series. So you split it, you take another series, and then you go on the road. You got Baltimore, which, you know, they're not the same. They're not the same as they were with Corbin Burns. And, you know, they're trying to figure some things out. Then you go to Miami, then you go to Denver, and then you come back home again. Look, this is the time right now for the Reds to put their foot down. And so
completely agree.
So you can't put Diaz in the ninth inning, in other words, without picking on Alexis. But they're in position right now to have a little bit of a surge and make some noise in the division.
Yeah.
As we get into, you know, as we get into May and start heading toward that quarter mark of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. I can't help, but, you know, Terry Francona would tell me, don't look in the rearview mirror and think back about what's already done. Because he does not do that. But you just look back on that string of three consecutive 1-0 losses. It would have been great to bank a couple wins during that period where you're getting the great starting pitching. Because, you know, they could be neck and neck with the Cubs already going into this stretch of favorable matchups. But the
beauty of that is, if you're talking about the Reds, is the pitching that you got in that stretch. It was there before. That stretch showed you how good the pitching was. It's been there since.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to believe that it won't, in general, be there this year.
Fair enough.
And we already knew, right? We didn't even get to Austin Hayes yet. But we already knew this lineup was going to have its challenges. That even at full strength, if they're lucky this year at full strength, if everything goes right, they're probably about an average lineup.
Yeah.
In terms of producing runs, and I think that they would take that, given where their pitching is.
Yeah.
But they haven't been that since. They haven't been that so far. And tell me what you saw from Austin and Hayes. I mean, this was a key guy coming out of spring training, and they only got him Tuesday.
Yeah, and we both agreed that he had a great spring, really hit the ball well. I thought he was, you know, the first day of pitchers and catchers, I think most guys reported early. I thought Austin, I saw him hitting on a backfield with Gavin Lux and Will Benson, and, you know, I think Ellie was in there at one point. I just thought Austin had power, and he had something that those other guys were still looking for at that point, which you expect. But I think in some cases, some of those guys are still looking for it. And Austin was locked in. So it was unfortunate to lose him up until tax day to the IL. But, man, did he make an impression.
But that was on a big tax return on tax day, wasn't it?
Yeah. Very good. What an impression. I mean, I thought it was a nice story when he hit a sharp line drive for a single to drive in a run to tie the game at 2-2. But then Reds trailing 4-3, he comes up in the fifth inning and bombs a three-run shot to the deepest part of the ballpark. Just really impressive. You could see what it meant to him rounding the bases. The crowd, it sounded, you've covered playoff baseball. I've witnessed it. I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but some of the stuff that we've seen over the last few days, you know, Ellie's grand slam on his bobblehead night, Austin Hayes, the home run.
Everybody's got a knack for that.
Yeah, I know.
Ellie's got a knack for moments, man.
It's unbelievable.
And that's what great players have. You know, yeah. He goes to L.A., his first game in L.A., he goes nuts. His first game last year, and he says, I just love this city. And he goes nuts. His first time at Yankee Stadium, huge game.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So that's kind of his debut. The first time he saw Ronald Acuna Jr. on the other side of the field. He pulls an Acuna and gets in his 15th career game, hits for the cycle.
That was a fun summer. That was a fun period in the summer that year in 23. But, you know, the cheers from the fans over the last few days, it sounded different. It sounded faintly like an October crowd, you know? So anyway, that was just a little observation I had about the Hayes three-run homer.
It was cold like
October. Yeah, that too. That too. Might be something there with how the noise travels through the air. Anyway, yeah, I mean, Austin looked great. It was a dream debut for him. And, I don't think that was what the Reds expected from Austin when they signed him. I think last night was better, certainly, than what they expect to get from him. Dream start. If Terry Francona said afterward, you know, he could speak in plain terms now that Austin was finally back. And, you know, he just said, we missed him. And you can see what that, it just lengthens the lineup in a really important way. He was hitting fifth last night as the DH. And they're going to be careful with him and Matt McClain for the first 7 to 10 days of them being back in, back with the big league club. But, man, was that a shot in the arm to have him back and produce the way he did last night?
Yeah, I tell you what I like about it. The DH in his debut aside, this guy is, we saw it in spring training, that he just had him in left field every day.
Yeah.
He played, him in left field. If you can just put him in left field, you know you're going to get a baseline production out of this guy. He's veteran enough. You know what you're going to get if he's healthy. And he was even an all-star 1 year. So you know that there's upside in there that you didn't see from him last year because he was injured for a while and he was sick for a while. So if you get him healthy, you can just stick him in left field. You're going to get baseline production, fourth, fifth guy in the lineup, something in that range. He's going to protect those guys up top. And then what it does for you positionally is it allows Gavin Lux to be rotated through third base more often. It allows you to match up there, which is a weakness position for you.
Yes.
And maybe get more there. Plus, if you're worried about Matt McClain and keeping him healthy and you want to rotate him through DH at least short term, put Lux over second. That's his natural big league position.
Yeah.
Essentially. Right? And so it allows you to use this roster the way it was built for Terry Francona to use it. And, you know, it's hard to overstate just how important it is. You got Friedland center already, that you can just stick a guy in left and know he's a veteran guy that's going to be in the lineup every day in roughly the same spot in the order and what it allows you to do with the other pieces. So Austin Hayes is a huge part of what they're trying to do here. And we've already talked about it. The lineup's not a world beater. It's not the top of the Dodgers order. It's not what the Mets have put together.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, they need to get what they can out of the combinations.
Yep.
And Hayes is a huge part of that in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. So,
anyway, and by the way, I'll send us off with another interesting. Well, I think it's interesting. Take it for what it's worth. The fielding, by and large, has been better this year. Yes. Now, they've had some dumbass mistakes. They've had some ugly looking mistakes, and they tend to be on fairly routine balls or misjudgments, right?
Yeah.
But here, this homestand. Now I'm going to totally jinx it. But as we go yeah. into the second game of the Seattle series, they haven't made an error during the homestand. And in fact, you go prior to that, you know, they've gone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They're 7-2 when they don't make an error. So, and they're what, 9-8 overall going in?
Yeah.
So that's 2-6 when they commit an error. That's the margin they're working with. Even with all that pitching.
Yeah.
They got to play clean baseball. And they've been doing it lately. And Hayes is a part of that too, in my mind, because he can handle left field. And then yeah. what he does for Lux, what Lux is able to then do by moving around, and you can mix and switch parts, and that'll help that process. That should help that process.
Oh yeah.
And so right now, the formula is working, as we get past mid April.
Yeah. You know?
So we'll see how it holds up, right?
Yep, we will.
All right. Well, that'll do it for us this week on the Big Pod Machine. As we like to say, I think we're award-winning, right? Aren't we the best? We're the best podcast, the best Cincinnati Reds podcast in history, honestly.
Yeah, if only in our own hearts and minds.
Well, I don't know. I think we'll bring some receipts on this next podcast.
That's right.
For me, Gordon Wittenmeyer, my partner Patrick Brennan, and our terrific producer Phil Didion, that's a wrap for this week's Episode 3, 2025 season of the Big Pod Machine. Take care. We'll talk next week.